Now, a simple reason why I use this term, question and response, rather than question and answer. Because actually, there are very few questions that I can answer, because most of the questions are not about verses in the Bible or some kind of truth that we've been taught or we want to be clear about. So there's a question about that, and it has been revealed in the Word and then made clear to us through the ministry, then I can give an answer. But among the, get ready, 46 questions, probably only 7 or 8% are questions that can result with answers. So you'll see when the questions come forth, I don't have the answer to any of them. I will not pretend to have that. So I just want you to be clear. This is just a brother having fellowship with you, just letting you know what I'm considering or thinking about it presently. And then it's up to you. You can sift it, you can discern it, and just consider whether that's applicable to your situation or not. I'm not trying to prove anything, but I take seriously these series of questions. It shows in a positive way different kind of needs in the lives of the saints in their present situation. And so this is worthy of our time. Now, there are 10 particular groups of questions, and I was so glad the brothers put them in these 10 groups. So what I will do, and this is a first-time thing, I spend quite a bit of time today, how am I going to handle this? I'll go through many of these sections and focus on quite a crucial question in that section. And then I'll go back to section one and just walk through the list of questions until it's 9 o'clock. Okay, I think we have to set a time. And so we agreed, some brothers before, it'll be 9 o'clock. And so this is in the section on dealing with the tide of the age, the corrupt and perverted generation. Question. I don't have a problem with gay people or people with gender identity issues. I don't care about the current state and direction of California or the USA because my hope is not in them. And yet I feel I'm not one with some saints in this. What's wrong with me or us? Then the second question is very close. In these days, God's design for gender is under attack. Young adults and young people growing up in this generation are sympathetic and are allies of this cause. How do we shepherd saints who believe these things? Is this an essential of the faith? And so I'm beginning with quite a direct and somewhat firm response. If there is anyone, any Christian, and any brother or sister among us who is truly regenerated, is a member of the body, called by God for his purpose. But if they're rather the younger ones, still teenagers or in their 20s or early 30s, and they can seriously agree with this kind of gender concept that we're born physically, but that doesn't determine whether we're male or female. So They may even have a degree of going along with the teaching in the public schools and elsewhere, starting at kindergarten, even prior to kindergarten, that, oh, you can decide. You can change your gender, or you can be both. And I just want to, okay, I won't. I can't do that. And so if anyone is taking this seriously and believes it, okay, then these dear saints and those that are concerned and have a loving concern for these saints need to pay attention to two verses from Paul's writings that are related to this. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4. You're talking about certain people there and who are hearing the gospel, in whom the God of this age has blinded the thoughts of the unbelievers, that the illumination of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, might not shine on them. So the source of this teaching in the California public schools, we just focus on California, has its source in Satan, the God of this age. And the teaching is demonic. That is the source. And if anyone among us does not realize this, the spiritual source, and agrees with it, this is an indication, although their spirit is life because they've been born of God, their mind is the same as an atheist, as an unbeliever. The mind is being blocked by the God of this age, is being blinded. So there's not the necessary mental discernment. And then the other verse from a very familiar chapter in Romans 12. Verse 2, and this is Paul's direct word to all of us. Here, I have to find it again. Do not be fashioned according to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of the mind. And so the one who asked the first question, who's concerned with, there's disagreement among certain brothers and sisters. Some just fully reject that. They would say, that's anti-God. Others would say, we have to be reasonable. We have to consider this. Anyone who would agree with this is being fashioned according to the world, the present age. And if anyone listening to this or will hear indirectly from you, and they have to say inwardly, yes, I'm one that affirms this, I agree with this, even maybe I apply it to myself, I owe it to the Lord and to you to say, you have a long, long way to go. You need to be, if you're to be transformed in your soul and then go on to be mature in life, to be ready for the Lord's coming, you have to begin with the renewing of your mind. Otherwise, you will be fashioned in your concepts by the God of this age. And part of the question is this essential of the faith in what we believe? Well, this is my, and you can determine, you know, I'll just be coming directly, but you can discern that, well, teaching about gender is not part of the redeemed faith directly. But this is what I would say to anyone if I'm having not a debate, not an argument, but a conversation. If you say, I don't believe that the way we were born physically, what our body is, determines what our gender is, I would say, you are an atheist. You are a functional atheist. Read the first chapter of the Bible. Genesis 1, verse 26. God said, let us make man in our image. Male and female, I created them. Yes, the fall has damaged all of us. And those that have dysphoria, they genuinely have this. This is a psychological and physical condition that needs care. And in recent years, some contacted me through emails wanting fellowship and how can they go on with this dysphoria? Well, that's something beyond my capacity. And so this is my response. And there is another question that I'm kind of indirectly responding to. You could tell this is from young adult parents who are just afraid of raising their children in the Bay Area. If they're going to be in the public schools from 5 years on up, what will happen? Because from the governor on down, he's behind this. And those in the political power of this country are for this. And the system of education in California is advocating this. And I'm not going to say anything further about what parents should do. I have no right to say that. I mean, you know, I'm a grandpa. Maybe before long, if the Lord keeps me here, I'll be a great grandpa. But if I were a new father and I had a 5-year-old daughter going to school, it wouldn't be at a public school in California. It'll have to be something else. But I'm just exposing my view on that. Okay, now. These are two questions about truth that I can answer. So this can be brief. What's the difference between God's eternal economy and God's New Testament economy? And the answer is God's New Testament economy is God's eternal economy being worked out. In the Old Testament, the creation is a step for the carrying out of God's economy. But mainly in the Old Testament, we have typology that signifies what will be coming in the New Testament age. And there will be prophecies. And so God's New Testament economy is the eternal economy. Then the next question is, what is the difference between new man and new creation? The thoughtful question. So the original creation by God did not have the divine life as part of it. There is nothing of God in that human vessel. But a new creation based upon Christ's redemption, that is a human being with the divine life and nature added to it and mingled with it. So that is, you could say, a spiritual substance or the element of a regenerated person. But then the new man is the issue of this new creation, and that is a corporate person It's really the church as the body of Christ, now being one new man to fulfill God's purpose revealed in Genesis 1:26. Now, another question is about voting and asking if there's anything wrong with voting. I don't have any feeling that it's voting. We are citizens, and we have the right to vote if we want to. And when you vote, you have to vote for somebody. I mean, at a certain point, for a particular reason, I stopped voting. I voted for a very, very long time. But I just felt, in order to keep my soul not affected by what's going on politically, I will vote differently. So during every election, I vote for God. And so I realized Brother Nee, you know, he had a certain feeling about it, but there's nothing wrong. And you just, if you're a citizen and you want to do it, and you're not arguing and debating and making issues of politics, you're just making the choice that you think is best, you're free to do that. There's nothing wrong. Just be at peace about that. Okay. This question is a set of related but follow-up questions from Brother Ron sharing in message 6 at the Thanksgiving conference. How do I know when my spirit and soul are separated? How does it feel like when my soul and spirit are separated? How do you have our soul and spirit separated so one can live in two realms simultaneously? A very important and thoughtful question. So the response is partial answer, but mainly response. Okay, we know that within our body, there's the soul. And within the soul, at the deepest part, is our spirit. And we have been regenerated in our spirit. But if our soul and our spirit are not separated in our being, two or three things may happen all day long. One is we may not sense the difference between soul and spirit. There are other questions based upon, I feel. I don't know where God is. I don't feel that he's here. So the questioner, that's just expressing the feeling of the souls. If that one were in the spirit, then there would be a different sense. But another matter is this, that no matter what our work and responsibilities are, we have to use the faculties of our mind, emotion, and will, especially our mind. And our job may require it, and we have to be very accurate and clear. But when our spirit and soul have not been divided, and we have to exercise the functions of our soul, our spirit is kind of just overpowered, because it's within the soul. And it's when, now you can take a break. You started working at 8:15, now at 12:30, you have lunch. And so maybe you have 45 minutes, and now you can have a rather belated morning revival. Better to have it at 12:30 than not to have it at all. And mothers, often they're in their kind of that situation. Little children, especially infants, they don't know it's morning revival time. And anyway, then now you don't have to concentrate on your work. You don't have to think about it. Now you can read the word, you can pray, you can sing. And then, dong, time gone. And then you go back for the next 4 hours. And I know this from my own experience teaching for many years. that all afternoon I'm engaging these challenging kids. And then when it was all done, okay, then now I can realize there really is a God. He's alive. I can contact him. But when the word as a sharp sword, in a certain kind of situation, one of the things arranged by the sovereign God, the word will separate our soul from our spirit. So both can function at the same time. And so while I am using my mind and other parts of my soul to speak with you right now, simultaneously, my spirit is contacting God. And in a sense, is praying and receiving dispensing from him. So this is why it's so crucial. Brother Nee, in his book, The Breaking of the Outer Man and for the Release of the Spirit, has a very helpful portion on this. Also, if you would just go online and just put in Living Stream Ministry Search, and that will put you there, and you can put the subject that you want to know, and then you decide on how many things should be brought up, 10, 30, 50, or 250. And then there'll be on the screen the ministry and some crucial sentences. So that can really help you there. Okay, now reading life studies. We are being encouraged these days to read the life study messages in NorCal. In NorCal, we have been on this schedule to read 2 life studies a week for about 8 years. Very good. Although this is very good, not all the saints practice it. But even among those who do, including myself, we sometimes find that it is difficult to, quote, deep dive into 2 messages a week, along with so many other lines, that is, Bible reading, Holy Word for Morning Revival, life studies. What do you recommend? Well, I'm going to make a recommendation, but in no way is this disagreeing with the plan for the saints to read 2 life studies a week. I'm approaching this from another angle. And that is, just consider, at least Monday through Friday, what is your schedule? How do you make use of your time? What are you really able to do? Because sometimes it could be a co-worker, it could be an elder who's just saying, the church, here we've decided we're going to read through the Bible and the footnotes in X number, maybe 2 years. And then several months later, there's another announcement. We should all be getting into this. And then you got the dear saints that are so faithful, they're wondering what to do. So here is a genuine response. You just consider with the Lord. What are you actually able to do? You're not under a law. The leading brothers, the elders, are not piling this on. They're faithful to follow the leading of the work in this area. But you just have to consider. I remember, this goes back more than 40 years. And my wife then, she wrote a poem about a cold cup of tea. It was a very interesting poem because there were 3 children, and maybe from 2 to 6 to 8 and a half. And when at a particular time they're all home, They're all quiet. Now mother's going to make some hot tea. And she made it. And while the tea, you know, was getting ready, then all kinds of things happened. This and that and this and that from this one and that one and all of them. So maybe a couple hours later, oh, my tea. And now it's a cold cup of tea. And it was a positive little poem that I don't remember, that this is the life of a mother. This is the actual situation. And I believe the Lord, in his care for you, understands all that you have to do day by day. And yes, you agree with the direction the church is taking. But I suggest be at peace with what before God you are able to do. You don't have to hide. You don't have to pretend. You can just honestly say, brothers, this is what I'm able to do seriously and helpfully at this time. Okay, cooperating by following the Lord. Given that many mature saints in the Lord's recovery are aging, that's true, becoming physically limited and passing away, what do the saints in their 20s, 30s, and 40s need to do and experience in order to carry on the Lord's recovery so that the Lord would not be delayed in his return? Isn't this a wonderful question? A very thoughtful question. Okay, here's a response. And this may take 3 or 4 minutes. And I'm referring to this book that goes back 70 years, The Experience of Life. And there's four sections there. And the second section begins with consecration. And then, you know, the first section was dealing with the past after we've been saved, then consecration, and then dealing with sin, dealing with the world, dealing with the conscience, things like this. And so many saints in their 20s, 30s, and 40s stopped toward the end of the second stage. And it's just a fact. My heart aches because of it, but it's a fact that there are saints way beyond 40, 50, 60, high 70s that have not grown in life for 25 or 30 years. And one reason is, and we can't get into the details, they were not led, or they did not enter into the third stage, the stage of the cross. And those that are passing through this stage, who are in this age group, 20 to 40, the future, to a large extent, depends on whether or not the brothers and sisters of this age group are being led by the Lord into this third stage. Okay? Experience one, dealing with the flesh thoroughly. Then dealing with the self thoroughly. Dealing with the natural constitution thoroughly. And certain other things follow, like dealing with the spirit, not the spirit itself, but the Lord clearing the way in our inner being through which the spirit is flowing. And then this brings you effortlessly into the fourth stage, knowing the body, living in the reality of the body, experiencing ascension, reigning, and warfare. And so the best thing that those who are asking this question and those in this age group, because they don't want them to be a factor of the Lord delaying. So many of mature saints have gone to be with the Lord. And even those that are still here, they may be very limited. There is one beloved brother in Anaheim. His wife passed away, and he's 86, and the brothers put him in a kind of place where an elderly person is taking care of. He's still here, but what can he do outwardly? And so this has been in my heart for more than 30 years, that the saints would be shepherded. Honestly, it's a rather rare God-caused seeking saint to have the sense that I need to enter into this stage. And I'm giving the credit to God here. I came into the Lord's recovery in September in San Francisco, 1966. And I diligently went through the second stage, just by the Lord's leading. And one day, I came home from teaching school. I was having some time with the Lord in the Word. And I was reading through Genesis. And in the chapter about Joshua is fighting against Amalek with the sword. And that signifies the flesh. And the Lord indicated to me, now dealing with your flesh starts. But how the leading brothers would do this, that's all together under the headship of Christ. But maybe in some places there need to be like a mini local conference. You don't have to bring in a co-worker on dealing with the flesh. We want to enter into this stage. Then maybe 6 months later, let's have a mini conference on dealing with the self to open the way to shepherd the saints to develop in this direction. So this is my response to that. Okay, a question from the Thanksgiving conference. At the Thanksgiving conference, there was fellowship about not just opening, but opening the depths of our being to the Lord. Can you share a little more on this deepest type of opening, experiential examples, and/or portions of the ministry that would provide more light on this matter? So I will respond in two ways. One is from the side of experience and learning, and the other I will give to you from Brother Watchman Nee's collected works, two particular messages that are of great help. Okay, so the matter of the depths. And we have really no realization how deep our human being is, our makeup. And actually, there are three things. One is based upon Proverbs 20:27. The spirit of man is the lamp of Jehovah. You know, searching all the innermost parts of our inner being. This is allowing the mingled spirit to shine in and penetrate the inner substance of your being. You're just open. You're willing for the light to shine. And when the light shines, certain elements of the enemy disappear. And now the Lord has a way to transform you, to renew you, because you're willing and even you desire to have light shining into the innermost parts of your being. The second thing on the experiential side is illustrated by the Lord Jesus' parable about the sower sowing the seed. And eventually the one good seed, the one that reacted so positively, but then it was totally annihilated because it was so shallow. There was just a big rock in between. So there was no roots. But in the fourth stage, this is a crucial point. And Brother Ni emphasized this in a wonderful way. In our personal life, we need roots like a tree going down. And what is happening there is we're having contact with the Lord, experience with the Lord that we don't talk about. It's part of the inner life with the Lord. And when we're open for that, and we don't just excitedly talk about everything, oh, this is what the Lord showed me, this is what I experienced, then it just flies away. But we need to have, we know this from Matthew, the Lord's teaching in chapter 6, about in secret, doing so many things in secret. The Father is in secret, he sees in secret. We need to ask the Lord to show us how to have a personal life that's really hidden. It's altogether positive. And then the third experiential matter is that your being is open to the Lord, especially by the cross applied by the Spirit to any part of your being. You can tell the Lord, I don't know really what's in me. I don't know really what I need, but I want to be, I choose to be, and I am an open vessel. And I open the way for you to touch any part of me and go into any part of my being. And now, the two messages from Brother Ni. The first is in, I'm mentioning, is in, these are the collected works of Witness Lee. Verses, okay, first volume 37. And there, in this book, there's the matter of going deeper. You can find it here. Deep calls unto deep. It's message 7 in this book. Based upon that sum, deep calls to deep. And only when someone speaks from the depths, and especially in shepherding people, can the depths of that one you're caring for can be reached. And then in volume 38, message 66, called Life in the Depths. And this message really helps you understand what I was trying to say briefly about we need to have roots going down into our being. And now I'm going to respond to a whole section, called FDTA, parenthesis, vaccination. And there are 5 questions here, and they're all really one. Why do saints need to be vaccinated to go to the full-time training? Well, up until now, and this is by the administration of the full-time training, and I'm not an administrator, so I come under that. But when they began to come in person, we're still in a certain stage of this COVID matter. And so in order to keep all the saints as healthy as possible, they made this a requirement. And whether or not this will continue, I don't know. And maybe the brothers who are taking care of this, they might understand that this view, this practice concerning vaccination may be the reason why there are 100 less trainees now than there was in the recent past. Okay, are the FDTNA brothers willing to fellowship with ones who are not vaccinated? Yes, they have been, and they are, and they will. They're very balanced, they're fully open, and they're absolutely trustworthy. Then another question. In the beginning, many leading brothers spoke about giving to Caesar. What is to Caesar? For a response to getting vaccinated. This led many saints to get vaccinated and some didn't. Caused a division in the church because instead of saints following saints, they wanted to seek the Lord in all their decisions. If these saints sought the Lord and had no peace to get vaccinated, shouldn't they be able to attend the FDTA? But as far as the FDTA, I think I've already explained the situation. And you may or may not. It depends on the reason and on your health and other things. Since the training is based on seeking and pursuing the Lord together. But here I want to point out that I know in some churches, there was for a period of time, division. There was division in two ways. And I got emails that I wouldn't respond to from both sides. In one place, this is far, far away. Someone was just advocating strongly, no vaccination. You can't trust in that vaccination. You don't know how it's going to affect you. You shouldn't do that. And those that wanted to have and got the vaccination, they were bothered and they had to kind of defend their decision. And then in other localities, it's the opposite. That why don't you get vaccinated? That how can we come together if we're not all vaccinated? Well, I don't know much. And you can correct what I think I may understand. But I talked to a doctor, Brother Michael Stewart. This explained to me the effect of the vaccination. And he made it clear, contrary to what President Biden said, oh, if you're vaccinated, you'll never get this virus. He said, it doesn't keep you from receiving this virus. It doesn't prevent you from passing on that virus. But its function is to save you from a very serious condition under that virus and thereby save your life. And then CDC, and I just want to be kind of direct here. Maybe I should, I think I can tell you. I have limited confidence in CDC. When they're talking about, oh, vaccinating 5-year-old kids and elementary school kids. And then I listened to one expert on child health, a physician. And he was just saying the positive effects negatively. And anyway, according to this question, and this is the fact, recently, more vaccinated have died than those that were unvaccinated. And so someone asked, you know, why? This is a reasonable question. Since saints can attend trainings, itero, conferences, meetings without being vaccinated, why do we need to be vaccinated to go to the FTTA? Well, I somewhat responded to that. And I don't know whether this will continue in the fall. I do hope there will be just genuine fellowship between especially the officer brothers at LSM and those in the administration of FTTA and all the co-workers teaching there, that we just consider how do we go on from here. And I have hope, but I want to underscore the fact that I have full confidence and respect for the brothers in the FDTA administration, like Brother Dennis Higashi and Brother Doug Gideon. And you just may want to contact them. Just have fellowship. You'll be, I believe, quite enlightened from that. And now let's see. Okay, another section. Oh, marriage, married life. Parenting. Question from a sister. When courting, how do you know if someone is the one the Lord wants you to marry? I'm enjoying the day by day, but afraid of wasting my time in the Lord's eyes, especially since the brother is not clear. Okay, this is a complicated matter. We have to be very, very careful. The one thing I would say, and from time to time when I fellowship with fourth-term trainees, I'd say, there is no such person as the one. The one, the ideal partner for your marriage. Search for the one. It's just there's the one without a capital O. And if, and I tell the trainees, I don't know of any other way to suggest this to you. I ask you, if God the Father is not the source of your marriage, of what part of your life will he be the source? You just come to him and just pray for him to be the source, and he will have a way to make known his will. And so we have courtship to have genuine fellowship. And over a period of time, if the brother is not clear, I would suggest to the sister, depending on how long this has been taking place, you in a respectful way, you just say, you're not clear. And so I'm willing to continue this for another 2 more weeks. But if you're not clear one way or the other, I can't continue. Because some brothers, they never get clear. I know one brother, I'm glad he's happily married now, and the Lord sent him to another country. This was a wise thing God did. At least 8 times he didn't get clear. And there can be on the sister's side that they can't make the decision. And so you just, again, pray to the Lord as the source. But one thing that's an indicator, the more you love the Lord, the more you will love each other. And the more you love each other, the more you will love the Lord. And if you can find out, we can pray together. We can pray, read together. We can read life studies together. We can play miniature golf together. This is an indicator that what you sense from the beginning is really going to be consummated, because the source of this relationship is God the Father. Okay. A spouse became an opposer after attending the recovery for over 11 years, and he posting negative messages on the internet. The spouse continually persuaded that I leave the recovery. As a result, we are currently separated. Seems that all that is left is to divorce. But the spouse is a religious Christian and does not believe we should divorce. Then there's a similar question with it. I want to divorce my spouse. I want to divorce my spouse as we have irreconcilable differences between us. What does the church stand on this? And how can the church help? After divorce, should we go to different localities? Dear saints, you need to realize that the elders and the leading brothers, especially in the Bay Area, they've had a lot of experience with this, and they can render a lot of fatherly help to this. But all of the leading ones, all the co-workers, all of us, we are governed by principles established by God himself. And that the only ground for divorce is adultery. And so, in both of these cases, you don't have the ground to divorce. sometimes with the hope of reconciliation, there has been a kind of legal separation. But to say we just settle it by divorce, then this is going to affect your church life. And then especially in the case of the one says we have irreconcilable differences. Well, I'm reasonably sure that among the 8 billion people on the earth, there may be millions of married couples who have irreconcilable differences. But at least with a degree of human maturity, somehow they can just settle it. That I respect your view on this. You don't believe anything about the Lord's recovery and the church life. This is the wife speaking, but I'm for Christ and the church. And I just have to attend the Lord's Day morning meeting and the prayer meeting. I'm not going to force this on you. And if you want to go in another way on this during the same time, but we have also much in common. Okay, let me see. Okay. Anything more? Okay. Nazarites are supposed to abstain from death. There is a dear saint who loves the Lord, but often spreads opinion, self, and death in their coordination with others. How can we abstain from death if we have to coordinate with this one? After this one speaks, how do we maintain the level of life without the death impacting the atmosphere of the meeting and also spreading to the younger saints? But this is a difficult matter to handle. And many of us, and you'll see why, we have to stand against our disposition and having, at the right time and way, transparent fellowship. But first, you can discern death is coming out, and you're in this group meeting. You're all there. And this person habitually is speaking this, spreading opinions, expressing the self and death. Okay, what you first need to do, this may sound strange, but it's real. While this person is talking, you close your spirit to that person, and you close your heart to that person. And inwardly you pray, I will not take this in. You don't have to say anything. You just will not take it in. And if this is going on nonstop, then there may be two options, and both might be somewhat effective. After praying and having fellowship with someone else in your service group, you may try to have one-on-one fellowship with that person. Not to rebuke, not to be angry, not to condemn, not to judge, but to point out, do you realize the effect very often and what is happening? But you may realize, you know, you can't say such a thing to this sister or brother. It will be a volcanic explosion from them because they're in the self and they're protecting the self. And so you may need to bring this matter to the leading brothers. They oversee, according to Hebrews 13. The leading ones watch over the souls of the saints. And this is a church matter. And so you bring it to the brothers. There was some difficult situations, even in Anaheim, that were brought to me. But I'm not an elder. I'm not a leading brother. I'm just a brother here. And so to some extent, I could give them some fellowship. But then I said, this matter needs to be brought to the elders in Anaheim. Contact David Koo, Rick Scatterday, Albert Lim. I assure you, they will guide you in the best way. And I realize this is a church administrative matter, and that's not my portion. And I'm not going to overstep for that. Okay. Then one more. Then I'll go back to the beginning. And I have just a little over an hour, and I'll just do what I can. And if I don't respond to your question, which you submitted anonymously, in this case, I will receive and respond to an anonymous email. And I have to be honest. I won't be able to respond immediately after I read it. Because I say this kind of with a smile or a grin. You're not the only one sending me emails and texts. And if I were working on answering them all in any given week, it'd probably be 8 to 10 hours of working hours. But I will respond. As long as I'm still here breathing, I will respond. And this question is, evil spirits can inject fiery darts, evil thoughts to us. But do they actually know what we think and what our internal conversations are? Well, I cannot answer that, not even fully respond to that, because it's beyond our capacity of knowing, to know how much they know we think or what our internal conversations are. But somehow, because they're under the God of this age, and if it's the demons, they're different from the evil powers in the air, the rebellious angels in the air. And so it may be that they're sent even on the commission to do that. So they have some awareness, at least generally, like now, oh, you are now discouraged, or this is your situation. And then they inject fiery darts as thoughts, disguised as your own thoughts. You really think this is in my mind. This is my thought. But I've had to learn. The only way I've been able to learn, other than just revelation and light, is by mistakes. And the Lord uses them. And I realize this thought was going on in me. And I responded to that thought. And look at the result of that. Just inwardly damaging. And now I realize I'm going to pause and discern. This is not my thought. This did not originate in me. This was injected. And then, in the name of the victorious Christ, we can rebuke the enemy. But while this is going on, I don't want you now to be afraid. Just look at the verse, I don't know the exact verse, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. That matches a verse in Ephesians 6, the helmet of salvation on our head. You may not realize it. We're on the battlefield 24 hours a day. And the degree depends on how much, from the enemy's point of view, how significant is this person in relation to this warfare. And the battle, I'll just say this a little bit. Between God and Satan is, Satan wants me dead. And even wants to put into thought, so you're just an old man and it's so hard to live. Why don't you just give up? But I have someone who helps me come out of that immediately. And so, in 1 Thessalonians 5, it's the helmet of the hope of salvation. And I'm learning still. I need to pray daily because the battle is in the mind. Our mind is the battlefield. And I covered this a little bit in a Wednesday night message a few weeks ago. You just say, Lord, protect my mind. In Ephesians, with the helmet of salvation, save me. But I'm thankful for 1 Timothy 5, the hope of salvation. Because one tactic of the enemy is to inject thoughts. You have no hope. Look how old you are. And you're not even transformed. How are you ever going to be mature in this life? Why don't you just spend the rest of your years enjoying something in the world? Whatever it is. But having hope is a necessary need we have. That the indwelling Christ is our hope of glorification. In Romans chapter 15, Paul speaks of the God of all hope. And we all need in our thinking positive hope for ourselves, for one another, for the church. And it's a helmet of the hope of salvation. Because this battle is not going to stop until the bride makes herself ready and the Lord has the bridal army and then comes with his bridal army and deals with the enemy on the earth. And then there will be the age of righteousness. And so just this simple prayer. Lord, cover my mind. Protect me. And then with thoughts come. The enemy is subtle. He just wants you to think, oh, this is just me doing this. And if you're not clear, you just pause and say, Lord, where did this thought come from? And you'll realize almost immediately, this is not from you. This thought does not originate with your mind. And so you realize no matter what the thought is, you reject it and ask for your protection. And even more than that, the body is your protection. Because only the body can put on the whole armor of God. And when we are in the body, there'll be other members that may have the shield. Others have the sword. Whatever it is, we're protected. We need the church and we need one another for this. Okay, now I'll go back and go through the various sections as I'm able to. And someone asked about overcoming the lust of the flesh. But we have to realize that our body will remain a body of sin and a body of death until we're transfigured, until we're raptured. And so even after we are learning to live in the Holy of Holies, there's still the separation, the veil is there, signifying flesh broken. And so this one needs to, I would say, spend a few weeks, little by little, reading that chapter in the book, The Experience of Life, on dealing with the flesh. it involves much more than you might imagine. And it will give you the practical way. And then I would encourage you, seek fellowship. We all, in various ways, have some difficulty with this. In various ways. Then if you look toward the end of Romans 13, Paul speaks about just to avoid anything that would stir up the flesh. And so just consider what you read, what you hear, what you see. And if you are weak in this, then you pray. Then you can come to, you know, a more mature person who's had to deal with this also. We're all the same. And then you will get some really tender-hearted shepherding for you to get through in this. Okay. These are some questions on shepherding. I've tried to stir up a brother under my care for years, but not successfully. Is there a correct way to do this? Okay. Well, with this kind of situation for years, there's no way. There's no correct way that the person is impenetrable as far as you're concerned. And so I would suggest you still have some contact. But mainly, you will pray as the Lord leads you. But this may be surprising. We have so many sheep among us that need to be shepherded. And I learned this again from Brother Lee, his training, that eventually we need to devote our time to those who are open and responsive, but still have some contact with those who are not. This makes it very practical. Then another question. There's been speaking on the matter of only being able to shepherd others to the extent to which you have been shepherded. Well, I pause here because I gave a message on this, referring to Psalm 23. Lying down in green pastures, kneeling beside the still waters. The Lord renewing our soul, or walking through the valley of shadow of death, or having a feast on the battlefield, of dwelling in the house of God. This is a cycle. So if you've been shepherded to the green pasture, you can bring someone else to the green pasture. If you have been brought to the living waters, you can guide someone there. If you've been experiencing the Lord's saving of your soul through his shepherding, you can do the same with someone else all the way through. And so, but in principle, the statement is true, because shepherding is to render all-inclusive, tender care. I just wonder a little bit, maybe every 5 years I wonder for 30 seconds, how can a Roman Catholic priest help anyone concerning marriage? You can say, well, it's a sacrament. Okay, you call it a sacrament, but you're not married. I'm going to seek help from a mature married person who knows what it's really like. And so shepherding is like that. Otherwise, it'll just be a kind of doctrinal conversation. You know, another question, how can we shepherd the saints so that they serve in spirit instead of human training, thought, or opinion. Well, our shepherding in this matter cannot accomplish that, but it can open the way for the sovereign God to accomplish it. Because there's opinions there in human training and thought. And so there's a reason that this one is not shepherding in spirit. And there's two main ways that will this take place. One is if there's some particular training to help anyone who's desirous of getting help. And then we may share with them our testimony, our experience of what it was like, the difference of just serving in spirit instead of by natural ability. In the past, to a certain unbeliever, I failed to shepherd according to God's heart. Rather, I shepherded based upon my own law. Now he does not come to meetings anymore. I regret, but I don't know that if there's still a way to shepherd him. Well, there are not ways. There's not methods. I would just be very simple. Just bring this matter to the Lord in conversational prayer. And I believe you will at peace. You are quite hard on yourself. You're just a learner. You're in an early stage. You had the heart to care for this person. You did what you were able to do at that stage in your life. Just let it go. But then just bring it to the Lord. Just say, Lord, you want me to help this person in any way. Okay, I did vaccination. Okay, as a leading brother, how would you deal with a situation where a sister tries to direct or lead the direction of the meeting? Okay, you're a leading brother. And this is what eventually you will need to do, because this will be ongoing. It will intensify. She tries to direct or lead the direction of the meeting. And two of the brothers, not with sisters involved, just two of the brothers, after much prayer and realizing in my fallen nature, I'm the same as this one. I'm not better. And Lord, just have mercy on me. So you come with a proper spirit. And you just, you're not rebuking. You're not judging, but you're talking transparently. Just say, sister, we have received many reports concerning the way you function in a meeting. And surely you must have a heart to participate in this kind of meeting. We appreciate that. But this is what a number of saints have been feeling for a long time. But whether you know it or not, you're trying to direct the meeting. You're trying to lead the meeting. And she may say, well, yes, I have been. But these brothers have been passive. What are we going to do? Brothers sitting there are passive. Well, that can happen. You got to be ready for that. You just say, You may be accurate, but even if the brothers are somewhat passive, there can be a way suitable as a sister just to have fellowship and just bring in some prayer, but realize the boundary of what you are, humanly speaking, and the measure of grace that you have. And here's a similar question. How do you shepherd saints who serve with strange fire in their church service? They may be unaware of it without being critical or offending them. Well, the response is very similar to what I mentioned about closely related situations. First, you need to bring this to the Lord and wait upon him. Don't act quickly. One sign that we are really growing in life is that there are less and less reactions in our daily living. But I read something about this in Brother Nee recently, and I cannot say yet I am reaction-free. No, the capacity is still there. But there's somewhat less. And when they're there, they're dealt with instantly, but still it's a reaction. You don't want to deal with anything as a reaction. Then you have to consider, is there anyone who might be the proper person to have fellowship with this one? And there's a way to do it. You may have coffee together. You may say, do you realize something about the way you operate many times? This is a very gentle way. You are a man of fire. And I'll tell you this, when you speak from love, it will not hurt. What you say will not hurt anyone. And they will. They'll take it. They won't react. What do you mean? Well, you know, just from time to time, you are really very, very active. It's probably a dispositional matter. And you just kind of help them come to realize this. And if it's in this atmosphere of brotherly love, eventually that person will say, thank you. Thank you. And I'm open for more fellowship. Well, let's just pray together that we have a different kind of fire, okay? And I believe it depends, again, on our being. But when love is the source, then the Spirit will be more than proper. It will be tender. It will be transparent. It will be clear, with no judgment and no condemnation. Okay, how to preach, excuse me. Now, this is regarding how to preach the gospel to someone who is hurt. My relative's relative married to a full-timer more than 10 years ago. This full-timer had a love affair, abandoned his family, and went with this woman. Now this relative's relative does not come to the church anymore. Not only that, I have a very hard time to preach gospel to my relative, as it left a very bad impression. They think if a Christian does this, I don't want to believe in Christ. Is there any way? Well, surely it's unreasonable to say that all Christians are like this. And if this person is open just for conversation, you can't force it on them to say, I mean, I don't blame you at all for having this kind of feeling and feeling this way. But just look at me. I'm a Christian. Am I like that with you? No, you're not. Well, this is a Christian, someone who's saved it, but has not been fully growing up. And really, there's someone behind the scene that is trying to keep you away from salvation. I'm not going to try to argue or convince you, but because this happened to you, now the enemy, there is such an enemy, the devil, Satan, now he will keep you from believing in Christ, because this is what this Christian did. And it's your decision whether or not you will believe in Christ. But please make it reasonable, because the vast majority of genuine Christians never live this way and never behave this way. Okay, the ones on marriage, they're all gone. Okay, this is a challenging section here. On discouraged, depressed, and stressed out. And there are six questions here. How do you go on with the Lord when you are struggling to go on? Is it normal to lose your motivation to go to meetings or participate in meetings? Well, it's not normal. That's not spiritually normal. Just like having a COVID virus, that isn't normal, even though millions of people had it. And now, if this person is really open for fellowship, there can be shepherding, involves caring for people with teaching. And it's not teaching like in a classroom, but you need to point out, none of us can go on with the Lord by our own effort. We can't. We can't. All of us will have an ending point, because we don't realize it. You're struggling. This is self-effort. And what the Lord is waiting, to some extent, he's waiting for you to realize, I'm just worn out. I just can't go on any further. And I have no motivation. It doesn't matter to me whether I'm in a meeting or not. I don't care. And then now the way is open. And you need to represent the Lord in this way. The Lord has been waiting for you to realize this. So you let him care for you. None of us, there has never been a mature believer who was produced eventually as an overcomer, who went on with the Lord by their natural energy and motivation. None of us can do it. So you're not normal in having this condition. It's just typical. We're all the same. And in a different way from you, I've had the same kind of situations that I don't write poetry, but one time I was so depressed and I started writing a poem, but it didn't get very far, and I'm glad it didn't get any farther. I said, my soul is like the empty crater of a volcano. I'm just empty, but underneath there is this volcano. And I don't know how it just came out. And I just realized, I need grace. I need the Lord's care. Because when someone is consecrated, they're pursuing the Lord for a period of time. They're mainly relying on their natural capacity. We're all the same. And the Lord has to bring us to the point when your energy, your strength, your intelligence, any other characteristics you have to come to the point that they're useless. You need the God of resurrection to work in your being. And only the God of resurrection and life can bring you through. Okay, how do you gain, turn, pursue, exercise your spirit to the Lord when you feel like the Lord isn't there? See, when you feel like. Well, this person realizes, he or she knows the feeling. But as soon as you realize this is, you feel like the Lord isn't there. And so what is lacking here is faith. This doesn't mean I say exercise faith. No. Please remember the verse in Hebrews 12. Christ is the author and perfecter of faith. Okay, and if I'm talking to this person, I would say right now, I don't feel that the Lord is here, but I know he is here because I exercise my faith and I know he's always here. He's never away. I have experienced the Lord many times, but for a while now, I feel like when I turn or read the word, I struggle to turn and touch the Lord. I feel like even if I call or sing, it is just me, and I don't know where the Lord is. Again, I feel. So if you realize where you are, you're in yourself, you're in your soul, you are living by the feeling in your soul, and now eventually you will alert because the Lord is interceding for you. Remember that? He's at the throne of God interceding. The indwelling spirit is interceding. And eventually, I don't want to frighten you, but the sovereign God will arrange certain circumstances where something in your being will be much more active. And what will it be? It's your spirit again. Instead of living just in your soul, now you realize, I have a spirit. I'm one spirit with the Lord. The Lord is with my spirit. And in Ephesians 3, in the prayer that we all know, Christ is making his home in our heart through faith. Right now, I don't feel that the Lord is making his home in my heart. But I know he's making his home in my heart. He's making his home in your heart. And we just believe that he is. Okay, now we go on to another one from a sister. When I hear words regarding rejecting natural kindness, it sounds like a good quality, such as kindness, is not welcomed. I end up feeling like I can never be good enough for the Lord and disliking myself. How can I come to terms with this so that I can live at peace with myself instead of constantly disliking myself? So there are two things here, at least. Natural kindness. And I believe this sister realizes this is part of her disposition or the way she grew up. And she has kindness, natural kindness. Okay, get ready. Just keep using your natural kindness until it becomes resurrected kindness. Just like, okay, you have tender feeling for someone. You realize it's just my natural life. Well, just keep caring for that person until your caring is in resurrection. It will really happen. Because this is an attribute of God, kindness. And in the book of Psalms, again and again, tender heart, kindness. But this other matter, you are judging yourself, disliking yourself, condemning yourself. And once you realize this, see, no one can do this for you. We can help draw you out, but we can't make the decision. It's like when I was told I need to have the heart surgery. They don't just start operating on me. I must make the decision, right? If I say no and say, okay, we're not responsible, right? Okay, you're not. Just let me out of this place. No. And so if you realize you're in the self, then don't stay there. And if you don't know how to get out, isn't there someone, if not exactly a vital companion, but someone that you can have fellowship with? Could you just contact them and say, could we pray together? I need prayer to bring me out of myself. And the other one would be so happy because we're all just the same. And you'll come out. And once again, this is why we need the things. Because without the things, the development will really be delayed, the growth in life. But when the wise, sovereign God arranges certain situations that will touch certain parts of our soul, this will activate us. And we're not going to pray for this, that this happens to someone else, but it will. All right? We call each brother and sister in the church life because we are all part of God's family. However, in practicality, I do not feel like the saints are my family. I often still feel lonely and disconnected, although I am surrounded with so many people in the church. Is this normal? Of course, it's not normal. You know that. In a family, if I don't have a big one, I was sorry, not sorry to say, I was just an only child. I didn't want to be, but nothing I could do about it. But just when the whole family comes together, everyone from 16 to 83, quite an age range, we just know we're home. This is our family, no matter what our situation is. But see, once again, it's feel. And so I don't feel like the saints are my family. I still feel lonely. Well, the feeling about being lonely, that is real. That's accurate. But again, that feeling is generated from the self. You don't have to stay there when you feel lonely. There's a way to overcome that, but I can't get into that. But eventually you will realize, see, because I was an only child, so I'm coming into the the local church in Los Angeles, and Brother Ron, Sister so-and-so, but brother, sister. I guess I start using the word brother and sister. And then it dawned on me after a rather short period of time, and I just testified. I realize you're my brothers and sisters. I'm not an only child anymore. When I call you sister, it's because you really are my sister. It's not just a designation, and you're my brother, and I'm your brother. And then there's this breakthrough, and you realize you're home. Because like so many, I just insert this. This was not in like a church meeting in a meeting hall. This was in a Saturday night group meeting in a home. And a brother that I had contacted me and was shared with me about the recovery and the ministry of the age and was really helping me. And I thought, wow, he's another species of Christian. I've never met this kind of Christian before. And I was just there with my wife in that simple meeting. And then when I was walking out to the car, I just said to myself, I've come home. I've come home. And the Lord knew for the last couple of years, I've been looking for home. Where do I belong? Lord, you know, I made the decision under your direction. I left behind every aspect of Christianity, the entire system. I will not just leave the Presbyterian denomination. I will not have a sideways turn. I'm leaving the whole system. And I had the leading to drive out to California, and I came home. And many of you have had that feeling. You're home. What if some realize, even when you hear this, that this sister feels this way? I hope that some, you don't have to know who it is. Maybe before you fall asleep tonight, just a little prayer for these ones. Lord, just cause this one, enable this one to feel at home, a member of the family. And cause this one to have the faith that you are here and are always here. From a brother, I have been in the recovery for many decades. But I feel that I have not matured to where I should be. I love the Lord. Amen. His church and his recovery. Amen. But I often become bored hearing the same messages and find myself drifting into loving the world. Sometimes I question if I should serve as I feel hypocritical doing so. Any fellowship you could render would be appreciated. Well, it's for many decades, so that makes it clear. You must be well into middle age. Even if you came in at the age of 12, you're probably still in the 50s, okay? And you realize you have not matured. And one thing that could help is just this, if you ask someone, that you would feel is much more or reasonably more maturity than you, one of the leading brothers. And it would be a great help as someone who has quite a thorough awareness and knowledge of the ministry in its totality, they can say. I think if you would read this one message from Brother Watchman Nee, you'll be quite encouraged. You will. And how can I say that? Because I was in the same kind of situation that you were. And the Holy Word from Winning Revival was always good. It didn't help. And listening to certain messages, they didn't help. Because I had a particular need. The whole church didn't have the same need. I had the need. But the Lord somehow brought to my attention this particular message that is right on the target. And I realize I can trust this because the brother, in this case, Brother Nee, he passed through all of this. And I can sense this is real. And then you realize I'm having a fresh beginning. And then there's the prayer. Maybe the Lord may lead you to Revelation 21 around verse 6 or so. He who sits on the throne makes all things new. So actually right now, brother, while I'm responding to you, inwardly I'm praying that you will be renewed. I'm much newer now at 83 than I was at 38. I wouldn't want to go backward to 50, to 60, not to 70. No way. And that the Lord will make all things new. And some should just pray for our dear brother, that he will be refreshed, that he will be renewed, and that he will be motivated by the indwelling Christ to press on. Because, brother, I say this in faith, you are going to be raptured ready because you have the longing to be mature in life, and that is going to happen. What it will take, only God knows. But the prayers that are being offered right now are being answered right now. And the Lord will do what you need him to do, and you will reach maturity. And you will realize nothing has been better in Christ and the church than it is right now. Another question. When I think about the judgment seat of Christ, I get depressed. I am practicing to confess my sins, abide in the vine, deny my soul life, magnify Christ, read the word, call on the Lord, shepherd saints, prophesy, but the fruit bearing is so slow. Will the Lord consider us slothful and evil, even though we love him and try to practice his word? It feels like we are always short of the biblical standard. What can we do, and how do we know what we are doing is enough? Well, what do you sense from this question? There is sincerity here. There really is an honesty. And this one takes seriously the judgment seat of Christ. And then the expectation is, why is this one depressed? Because I'm going to be judged for all kinds of things. There's a record of all my failures and all this and that. And look what I've been trying to do, right? I've been practicing. I have been. This is me trying to do it all. And so I confess my sins, even if I'm not convicted of any sins. I'm going to try to find something to confess. Otherwise, I lose my peace. I heard one brother, he is middle-aged, he gave a testimony. And he was with the Lord in the morning, and he felt he should confess, and he felt condemned because he didn't have anything to confess. So you know what he did? He went to that book on character that had the listing of all the aspects of proper character. And he said, oh, now I know all the things I need to confess. This is self-judgment. I'm so glad in seeing him the years later that he has outgrown that juvenile kind of religious spirituality. And you're working to divide in the vine, abide in the vine, to deny your soul life, to magnify Christ, to read the word, to call, to shepherd. You may not realize it. You're sincere. But this is all your self-effort. And that is why you're depressed. But if you realize the Lord wants you to stop, you need to have a Sabbath. You need to have a no work day, even along about all these things. And let him shepherd you. Let him wash your feet to refresh you. Let him minister life into you and to help you realize, I've been waiting for you to realize you can't be this. You can't do this. You can't endure this. You will not arrive at this. No believers can. Let me be everything to you. Let me thoroughly take care of you. Instead of when you're convicted of a sin, you just confess it. You're forgiven and the blood cleanses you. If you're not aware of anything, then don't try to hunt for something, because there must be something wrong. I don't have a naughty thing or even a bad thing to confess. Oh, now I feel so much better. Then God won't judge me because I confessed something. And so the Lord, he really cares for the feeling you have about the judgment seat of Christ. And now the enemy is imparting fear into you, taking advantage of this depression in you to intensify it. And all of us, this is a matter of hope. Faith is a matter of something already accomplished in the past. Hope is for the future. No one can honestly say, I have faith. I have faith that I will pass through the judgment seat and be in the wedding feast. This is absolutely erroneous. I received a strange email from someone who just boasted. He said of himself, I'm an overcomer. I'm an overcomer. There's no way to help him. But whoever wrote this is worried. He will consider me slothful. If anything, you're not as slothful with all you've been doing. And evil, no. He will not call you evil. Though we love him and try to practice the word. Okay. It's the trying that's holding you back. And because you love the Lord and you're consecrated, and you want to go on to the Lord to maturity and to be in the kingdom with him. So you're trying, but it's your trying that's interfering with the Lord's operation in you. And to tell you the truth, you may try to stop trying. We're just, you know, I say this in a tender way. We all can be kind of goofy at times. Like, okay, the brother suggested I should stop trying. So I guess I'm going to have to try to stop trying. Then you're going to try in order to try to try stop stopping. Just say, Lord, you know where I am. I'm coming to you as I am and where I am. And then again, this prayer is going up, I believe right now, in many of us, for this dear one. Lord, save this saint from self-effort, from trying, rather than just receiving the divine dispensing, and let you live again. Not on the earth personally, but in all of us. And surely this will more than supply your need? Or will there be a biography of Witness Lee written sometime soon? Not that I'm aware of. Someone, I can't say, with very good motive and intention, was writing one with probably hundreds of pages of history. And many of us did not have the peace we were serving together. You consider what Brother Lee wrote. It's not this kind of, you know, Amazon book type biography. And after he wrote it, he didn't publish it for at least 10 years. And so the Lord is guiding us, learning from how Brother Lee related to Brother Nee's ministry, whether I should write a biography, whether I should print it or not. And we're seeking the Lord. Lord, how should we take care of this matter? Surely it would be beneficial for the saints to have a biography of Witness Lee. But we want to follow in the steps of Brother Lee. We don't want to do something in a natural way. And then another question, very different. The lampstands in Revelation are the seven churches, prophetic signs of the church. Each age has a star messenger or minister of that age with the ministry of that age. Now, I have to correct a mistake. Okay. And so, sister, this is a very thoughtful question. And woven into this question is the realization and appreciation for the ministry of the age and for the ministers of the age. I am not a minister of the age. Brother Nee and Brother Lee were the ministers of this age. We are just following in their footsteps and developing as Brother Lee charged. It's like he said, every book in the Bible is like a mine. And I opened every book as a mine. Now you need to go deeper into the mine. But the reason what I need to correct, it was the messengers were for the seven local churches in that time, because they were actually local churches. And the Lord was speaking to the messenger, the one who would speak to the church. And I've wondered, okay, no, I can't get into that. Thank you, Lord. But yes, although stages are typified by the church, but that doesn't mean there is a minister in every stage. I mean, Brother Nee being, I believe, a genius with an amazing memory, he just could read quickly and remember everything. He just read out the entire history. And there were spiritual people, and maybe they were overcomers in that age. But in certain stages, there wasn't such a ministry. But there is the ministry of the age now. Luther was the minister of the age. Then, what, 300 years later, John Nelson Darby was the minister of the age. And then in the 20th century, the Lord knew he had to go to China. He had no way to get through in North America or in Europe. And so they are the ministry of the age. I personally think the age is coming to an end. The Lord will come soon, He doesn't need another minister of the age, although two people openly declared they are the new Witness Lee. They are the minister of the age. Well, these are people that are deceived and probably not mentally healthy. But what you have is a group of brothers, by the Lord's grace and mercy, are faithfully continuing the ministry of the age. And we're deepening the mind that Brother Lee opened. And then one more question. Sometimes when there is a speaking to maintain the integrity of the recovery, it feels like some of that is the desire to maintain a kind of church life culture from the past rather than that which comes out of the living touch with the Lord. I feel really bad for feeling that way, but I can't deny the sense deep in my spirit sometimes. So I pray for the Lord to heal his recovery of anything that's not of him and exercise to keep the oneness, but still struggle with if I'm in left field or not. Or you may have some awareness. You read the New Testament. You don't find a perfect church. When Brother Lee carried out the life study of 1 Corinthians, he said the church of God in Corinth was a typical local church. I thought, what? Look at all those things. But leading brothers know all kinds of things have taken place in a local church, all kinds of problems, all kinds of weaknesses and shortcomings. But this is still the up-to-date Lord's recovery. And there's another question I can just mention, that whether the Lord, because of we're falling away, that will he go to another people, and will that other people have to be on the ground of oneness? Well, of course, that has been recovered. And we just pray, Lord, make us faithful to the end. We want to be the ending of this age with you, that you will not have to turn anywhere else. Have mercy on us. Supply grace to us. Lead us on. We want the end of the age to come and you to come back. And so I think it's 1 minute before 9 on your clock. So I'm stopping 1 minute early. Okay? And so I just leave this with you, and whatever you want to do with it is yours. This was just your brother Ron having fellowship with you, responding the best he can right here and right now. But my final word is, may the Lord bless you all in every way, at every time, in every situation, in every manner, until we are raptured together to the throne of God. I hope to meet you personally in the Bay Area, but even more, I hope to meet you together in the fulfillment of Revelation 14 at the throne. But I think I'll be in San Francisco before we're at the throne. Allow me to say this. I just love you all.
Amen.
And I know you love me as your brother. And the church Amen. Is building itself up in love. Okay, now I went 1 past 9. So now I'm really done. Okay, Pat.